Radio Prague News. Social Democrat senators have warned they will lodge a complaint with the Czech Constitutional Court if the average pension drops below 40% of the gross salary. The authorities in Ostrava say the eviction order for people living in atrocious conditions in a Romani ghetto remains in place. And more Czech companies are moving their headquarters to tax havens. Senators for the opposition Social Democratic Party will lodge a complaint with the Czech Constitutional Court if the average pension drops below 40% of the gross salary, Senate Chairman Milan Štěch told journalists on Tuesday. Senator Štěch said the complaint would be based on the argument that the Czech Republic had adopted an international convention under which old age benefits should reach at least 2/5 of gross earnings. The upper house is to debate a government bill that will reduce the growth of pensions as part of its austerity plan. The authorities in Ostrava say the eviction order for people living in atrocious conditions in a Romani ghetto remains in place. An inspection on Monday reportedly confirmed that the buildings are in a severe state of disrepair and present a serious health hazard. Some 100 people, most of them families with children, have refused to leave their homes, although the deadline for eviction expired last Saturday. They have started minor repairs in the buildings in an effort to get the order reversed. However, the authorities claim that these repairs do not address the main source of the problem, such as faults to the electricity circuit, leaking wastewater and mold-infested damp interiors. Close to 300 Czech companies moved their headquarters to tax havens in the first half of this year, an increase of 2.5% year-on-year. Analysts say that if the set pace continues in the second half of 2012, it will be the biggest outflow of capital in the last 3 years. According to data provided by the Czech Capital Information Agency, 336 companies registered in the Czech Republic are controlled from tax havens. Among the most attractive destinations are the Netherlands, Cyprus and Luxembourg. The leadership of the Topo 9 coalition party said on Tuesday it fully accepted the presidential candidacy of lawyer Klára Samková. Party deputy leader Miroslav Kalousek said Mrs. Samková was fully entitled to run for president and had not asked for party support. News that the respected lawyer would be joining the presidential race caused some consternation in view of the fact that the party is officially supporting the candidacy of its leader Karel Schwarzenberg. Mrs. Samková, who announced her decision this week, says she is not perceived as a Topo 9 party member, but as a dedicated lawyer who specializes in cases involving the rights of minorities. Shell service stations around the Czech Republic have dramatically cut fuel prices, forcing competitors to follow suit. Shell unexpectedly started selling the top-selling natural 95 petrol for 34 crowns 90 halas per litre this week, approximately 2 crowns below the average, making some 100 rival service stations cut their own prices. Rival companies have filed a complaint at the Anti-Monopoly Office. Shell has refused to comment on its price policy. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days should bring partly cloudy to overcast skies with day temperatures between 22 and 26 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, Romani residents are determined to keep their homes in Ostrava despite an eviction notice. And the number in cyclist deaths in the Czech Republic has dropped. We'll have details, plus another edition of Spotlight. That's all ahead. After the deadline for evacuating condemned buildings in Ostrava's Přívoz district passed on Saturday night, around 25 Romani families remained in the buildings. Authorities visited the site on Monday to evaluate the state of each building, warning residents that they are remaining at their own risk. Masha Volinsky spoke to Kumar Vishwanathan from the Ostrava-based civic group Coexistence, who had spent almost a week in the Přednádraží ghetto. Here's how he explained the situation there right now.
People contend the statement of the authorities saying that not all 10 houses are dangerous. They're in different states. Some houses are too dangerous to live and nobody's living there anyway. There are other houses which can be repaired with some greater efforts, and there are houses which can be repaired with lesser efforts. There is also the big problem of the sewage system, which is the fundamental problem from our point of view, and that belongs to primarily the city authorities. And the city authorities, having known the situation for almost 20 years, have not done anything. For the past 2.5 years, the situation has grown so bad that the sewage system has completely collapsed. They've been put under a lot of pressure and health threats because of the failing of the city authorities. Now, these people, they say that they don't want to go anywhere. These houses are their homes. They think that they have to be renovated, they can be salvaged. There is a civil disobedience going on.
Do these tenants have legal ways of fighting for their rights in this case?
A legal approach is very complicated, but we're looking into it. The people are now fighting for the water, because they've been cut off from water. They're fighting for the sanitation. There are other things like electricity, structural problems, etc. And they're in close communication with the owner. So the owner has agreed that if they really want to live there, and if he gets the permission that they can stay there, he will invest in everything. But he says that his efforts are undermined by the fact that beneath the houses, the ground, the sewage system is completely destroyed. So he says that he should wait until the fundamental problem, the sewage problem, is settled, and then he shall go take these houses from the bottom up and start repairing. It has to be solved in Ostrava, by the authorities. What we feel is that there are shady deals going on behind the scenes to get rid of the people and use the land for other purposes, for industrial purposes, because the site is very well situated with good access to the highway, with good access to the railway connection to Poland and to the Baltic and to Germany. People think that there are other interests, especially some of the town councillors are actively involved in business entrepreneurship. They're businessmen, basically.
And I guess there is, at least at this point, enough support from organizations like yours for them to remain there.
We feel a lot of support. In fact, at midnight on Saturday, when the deadline expired for people not to remain there, and we were all in an illegal state, the postwoman came to express support, you know. In the morning, the waste collector came, you know, in his big truck, said, hold on, some lot of solidarity. We find people passers by who just stop, and instead of saying rude words at the Romani that normally happens here, you see very encouraging words from people. Hold on, you know, they see it also as an unfair kind of not transparent situation that Romani tenants have been put into, and they all are expressing support.
And that was Kumar Vishwanathan of Coexistence discussing the situation in Ostrava there, buildings that have been condemned, and the Romani families there are deciding to hang on. In related news, we're expecting a report on that to come out on Wednesday about the state of the building, so be sure to follow news at radio.cz for the latest update. Now, the number of cyclist deaths in the Czech Republic has dropped in previous years, according to statistics released last month by the police in conjunction with BESIP, the Transport Ministry's Department of Road Safety. Back in 2000, for example, 127 Czech cyclists died in traffic accidents. Last year, the number was 50. What factors contributed to the relative improvement? That was a question I put earlier to BESIP head Roman Budský.
Simply put, cycling has become more and more popular throughout the country. Cyclists have become more visible, and crashes with motor vehicles are relatively fewer than in previous years. Czech motorists are now more used to registering cyclists on the road and react accordingly. Also, many motorists are now cyclists themselves, so they can better put themselves in their shoes.
According to Roman Budský, increased awareness on the part of cyclists has also helped significantly. A poll by the STEM agency confirmed that 80% of those who get in the saddle now put on a bike helmet, markedly reducing the number of serious injuries. BESIP's Roman Budský again.
Bike helmets are a major factor, reducing the danger of head injuries by 85% and the risk of brain damage by almost 90%. Legally, all those up to the age of 18 are required to wear them. Others don't have to, but most usually they do.
Czechia republika patří mezi lídry, mezi světové lídry v tomto. Infrastructure as well over the years has improved. If there, the going has been slower. There are many areas where problems remain. Poor quality surfaces, a lack of bike paths, few alternative routes. There are also newer challenges as well that have had to be tackled. The increasingly popular use of bike trailers or trailer cycles for toddlers or young children, which carry their own risks, now falling under new legislation. And then there are areas where the number of accidents remains high, namely off-road or on the single track, where this year so far there's been one death and 320 cyclist injuries, a number that experts admit is high. Roman Butsky once more.
The number of injuries, including serious injuries in mountainous areas, is surprising, and we are now working on getting relevant numbers for the whole of the Czech Republic from the Mountain Rescue Service. In Liberec, for example, they are running a campaign whereby they stop cyclists on the trails, provide them with information, and warn them about the potential dangers. This issue, too, is coming under increased focus.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard so far in today's program, don't forget you can contact us here at the station by writing to english@radio.cz. And now it's time for today's main feature, which is Spotlight with Christian Falvey.
The location of the Czech-Polish-Slovak tri-border can be described in a number of ways. Geographically, it's in the Beskydy mountain range. Politically, it's Silesia, the oft-forgotten third region of the Czech Republic that today is a strip of mixed Czech, Polish, German and Jewish heritage straddling the northeast border. 20th century conflict, though, renamed southern Silesia Zaolzie, a Polish perspective place name that means beyond the Olzha River. 21st century reality, though, has left the names Poland, Slovakia or the Czech Republic with little real meaning there. This is, after all, the Slavic corner of the Czech Republic, where all three cultures, it seems, create a fourth.
W roku 1955, w trzecim miesiącu, i tu w tej gospodzie na Herczawym,
Tri-border resident Jindrich Wojkowski speaking what the locals call the Herchava language and describing the arrival of a Soviet ethnologist to the tri-border village of Herchava in 1955. The younger residents of this village speak fairly standard Czech with a heavy Slovak accent. The older ones speak this dialect of Silesian. In context, it's not just a dialect, but a linguistic wonder. The language was crafted for use among the three kindred cultures that meet here. There are about 60,000 people who speak Silesian, only several thousand who use the southern dialect, and according to inhabitants of the tiny tri-border village of Herchava, only a few dozen who speak its special variety here. The bastion of the language is the local school, where 9 pupils are tasked with keeping it alive.
In the village Herchava, we are speaking only Czech or dialect Herchavština. Yes? And the children at school speak only Czech language, but at home, the children with their parents speaking dialect Herchavština. But the young parents speak only Czech with their children.
The school's teacher, Ivana Robenkova, was raised in this Silesian dialect. Now she teaches it to the children here alongside Czech and English using song. Their great-grandmothers, she says, used to sing on a small hill behind the old pub here, where their voices carried well. People who moved here from whichever direction, mostly to marry, it seems, would take up the Herchava language rather than imposing their own. But that was a different age. The children today grow up with Czech, Polish, and Slovak radio and television. They understand the standard speech of 60 million people. Can a minuscule, archaic dialect compete? Now speaking in Czech, Ms. Robenková told me that it must.
Že bych byla ráda, aby se ta řeč herčavština dochovala.
I want to see the Hrčava language maintained. I don't want it to disappear, but there are less and less people to keep it alive. Some move away. Those who moved in from the surrounding states speak their own languages or try to speak Czech. They don't have any bond to our language. As long as I stay here in this school, though, I want to make sure that the children know their own language. I want the songs sung in it to ring in their ears so that they can teach their children. We are only a small village, but we have our own culture and customs, and it would be a pity if they were not preserved.
Ej, ušni, že mi ušni, ej, lebo mi urošni, ej, možeš mi přidač, ej, volky spola přigrač.
The Hrčava language is in part a throwback to the days of Austria-Hungary, when the only borders here were cultural, and the village marked the point where Silesian Slavs met Slovak Slavs. There were Polish-leaning Silesians and Czech-leaning Silesians, but no boundary ran between them, and their inclinations meant little until the empire broke apart and hell broke loose for a while.
After the breakup of Austria-Hungary in 1918, both Poland and Czechoslovakia laid claim to this region, Zaolzie, as we call it, and there was a horrible period when each nation invaded the region. In the middle of these disputes, Hrčava fell to Poland in 1920. Its citizens, though, would have none of it. They had always sympathized more with Czechoslovakia. But the main reason for their wanting to be annexed was the fact that the closest railway stations were half an hour's walk away in Czechoslovakia, while they were 2.5 hours away in Poland.
Mr. Wojkowski's train station explanation is unique because Hrčava's oral history puts great emphasis on the historic insistence of this island of Czech patriotism on becoming a part of the motherland. An important moment in the oral history of Hrčava was the day that a group of Czech patriots went by foot over hill and dale to Ostrava to demand Czechoslovak annexation. But whatever the cause, the fact remains that for most of the 20th century, this tiny spot on the tri-border was the only Czechosilesian community with no Polish minority, and to some extent it remains that way today.
The only school in the area here is Czech, and that is an exception to the rule because in all of the villages and towns on the Czech side of Hrčava, there are minority Polish communities. They have their own schools. The signs are written in Czech and Polish, but not here. Hrčava is different. In fact, the Poles even call it Little Prague, because Hrčava has held on to its Czechness.
The history of socio-political relations in this ancient community of 250 people are impossibly complex. The beautiful wooden buildings here have been built and rebuilt for 1,000 years, regardless of whether they belong to the kingdoms of Czech, Polish, or Moravian kings. If you watch the borders shifting here in fast forward, you would see a place that rarely enjoyed any true long-term political identity. But it is exactly that that's given rise to the unique mesh of Slavic culture that, at the moment, is called Zaolzie. In that context, you have to wonder at the complicated structure recently built to span the tri-border point itself. The point where the three countries come together was in an inaccessible ravine. What crosses it now is a rather complex wooden bridge with paved paths and steps leading from each direction. A lot of effort put into recognizing a tri-border that is open to everyone today, a fleeting point in space and time. Today the border is imaginary, but just yesterday it altered the history of the Silesian community that could not foresee it.
In 1990, they planted a friendship tree at the spot as a lasting sign of good neighborly relations, because people always used to congregate there, even before the country was divided, and they still meet there each year. For the 1st of May, they put up a maypole, and they meet in traditional dress, the Czechs, Poles, and Slovaks. They bring tubas, and they cut it down. Then they move to one of the pubs in Hrčava and continue the festivities there. We hold an outdoor mass together at the tri-border point every year. Lots of people from Slovakia married into Hrčava and vice versa, and the same goes for Javorinka over the Polish border. So we know each other, we visit each other. I would say that all three of these nations get along well together and work well together.
Dobrá spolupráce mezi těma třemi národy.
The Schengen Treaty that tore down the borders of European states was signed in a village like this one, a tri-border community at the Luxembourg-French-German border. I, for one, left the eastern Czech tri-border, the easternmost point in the Czech Republic, with a lot of mad cross-Slavic words ringing in my ears and a feeling of relief for the tremendous ramifications of that treaty in places like this, where national and cultural identities can return to their natural mingling state.
Christian Falvey with that edition of Spotlight Part 3 in his series on the four corners of the Czech Republic, which, of course, are being rerun but are well worth hearing again, I think. If you'd like to hear more stories or news, don't forget our website, radio.cz, and look us up also on the internet where you can take part in the discussion on some of these social networks such as Facebook or Twitter. Now, though, for those of you learning the secrets of the Czech language with us, it's time for ABC of Czech with Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Czech by Numbers, Radio Prague's Czech learning series in which we look at the use of numbers in everyday speech. Today I'm here with
Linda Maštalíř
and we'll be looking at numbers in addresses, phone numbers and so on. Let's start with the districts of Prague. It is a little complicated. Currently, Greater Prague has 22 districts, but only 10 of them are well known to most people. Most of the historic center, for example, is situated in Prague 1.
Praha 1.
Also known as
Jednička
or number 1. As we get further from the center, the numbers of the districts get higher. So if I tell you that the Czech radio building is located in Prague 2,
Praha 2,
you can imagine it's pretty central. Houses always have two numbers, at least in bigger towns and cities. The one on the red plate is the number in the land registry, which is called
číslo popisné,
literally a descriptive number, and there is only one building with that number in a given area. The blue one is the number of a house in the particular street. It is called
číslo orientační,
a reference number, and it is meant to help you find a particular house in a street. It is recommended to use both those numbers when writing letters because the blue one can move up or down when a house is demolished or built in the particular street. Another important number is the postcode,
poštovní směrovací číslo,
literally the postal direction number. It is composed of 5 digits and stands for one specific post office. Some large institutions, which receive a lot of mail, use their own postcodes. For example, Czech Radio has 12099, even though the rest of Prague 2 has 12000. And we must not forget the telephone number,
telefonní číslo.
In recent decades, there have been many changes in phone numbers in this country. While 20 years ago, many phone numbers in Prague had only 6 digits, it is 9 today for both landlines and mobile phones. There are a few exceptions, of course, such as emergency lines. The generic emergency number in the Czech Republic is 112.
112.
It is the number of the integrated rescue system. To call the police, you need to dial 158.
158.
To contact the firefighters, the number is 150.
150.
And if you are in need of an ambulance, you need to dial 155.
155.
But as we said before, if you dial 112, the operator will put you through to the right people. But let's hope you won't need to ever use those numbers when you come to stay in the Czech Republic. And that's it for today. We'll be back next time with more. Till then, naschledanou!
The ABC of Czech with Pavla Hráková. And if you've been listening for a while, you'll know, of course, that that's not the first time we've run this very popular series. So by now, your Czech must be up to snuff, I believe it is. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard today, english@radio.cz is the address to write to. Otherwise, that's it for today. I'm Jan Wellinger for all of us here at Radio Prague. Thanks for joining us, and take care.